Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 11. After finishing his afternoon with Veronica and Becker-Roller, Lopez had a clear intuition that the women were telling what they believed to be the frank truth. He found their judgments about the Crimson family to be apparently well-grounded in fact. About the time he got back to his hotel, he took a call from me. "These girls out here are pretty much big teddy bears," he said. "In all likelihood, there's more to them than would be a fit to pin them as suspects in the October 11 homicides. And Veronica Roller's historical account of the relationship between hers and the Crimson family also shows a cool forensic trail," he added. "Did they look wolfy at all?" I asked him. "I'm sorry, did you say wolfy?" he asked me back. I began, "Detective, something of interest happened last night in Oakland. Then later this afternoon, something totally apeshit has occurred down there for their follow-up act," I explained. "Though the relevance of all this to the price of tea in China or to the events on October 11 remains uncertain." "Go ahead, I'm listening," Lopez said. "So, Oakland PD fished the entire Chino Beavers bank track squad out of the drink in San Francisco Bay. They crashed their ambulance in there sometime last night, and they all drowned," I began again. "Hmm," he said. "But apparently the driver had some anomalous characteristics," I said. "Oh, like what?" he asked. "She was a woman-sized canine-like creature in a Chino Beavers uniform," I said. "No shit, they tell me. A wolf lady. And when they put the blade to her in the autopsy, or tried to rather put the blade to her, she bolted up on the table and mauled an Alameda County assistant coroner, and then she just hot-footed right on out the door. Well, I can tell you that these Phoenix girls appeared to be slick-body creatures, Rick, and they did not come across as nascent werewolves, but then again, I don't know what the early warning signs for that would be," he said. "Did anybody shoot at her when she ran off?" "Good question. I don't know. Probably, but she lived through the drowning. And I don't know how many lives wolf ladies have, and I don't know how many bullets they can take," I said. But apparently there's one on the loose in Oakland, for what that's worth to us. The aftermath of Wednesday afternoon's Oakland incident involved a good number of people standing around looking confused. And in fact, everyone with a firearm had, indeed, unloaded into the freaky wolf lady thing as it was headed for the door. If not while it, she was still eating the coroner's assistant. So that made it easier to track her because the thing was pretty drippy in her exodus. They trailed her about a mile or a half mile south of the coroner's office, where it looked as if she jumped into the drink of the Oakland Inner Harbor waterway. Authorities down there dived and dragged that all night. Fruitlessly, they did their best to mop up all the gore from their morgue and preserve the peace while it might last, if possible, but I could understand their plight. Generally, it's difficult to write wolf lady on any official document and expect it to satisfy bereaved family members or anyone else. By now, they were glad to have the posties come out and lift their leg on their fire plugs there local with great aplomb, since their story wasn't believable to anyone whatsoever. Might as well put an official federal stamp on it and save face. Up here, the sun went down, the rain continued, and at the diner I sat with hot coffee, doodled on my napkin, and glanced around the room from time to time. I made small talk with the waitress and when she came by. After getting that weird-ass story from Oakland, the lieutenant and I had just called it a day, and it was technically quit time anyway. Sometimes goofy odd stuff happens, and all police, medics, and first responders in general, as a demographic, will tell you that. Stuff just doesn't make sense sometimes and probably won't ever. Often, though, you sense it right when you step in it, as it were, in whatever form it arrives in. It's still just like things that are immediately explainable. The confusing stuff still burns an image of a sort in the mind's eye, so you get into a sort of habit one way or the other, have taken everything in stride so that you can still do your job, regardless of the circumstance or sensory input in time and space, in the context of your workday, whether it's explainable or not, because frequently we're thrust into situations that are undefined, at least temporarily, but they must nevertheless be navigated. The waitress navigated over to me and topped off my coffee, smiled, and I smiled back. I didn't know what we were expected to do about the weird story from Oakland. Hell, they had no idea what to think either. I felt sorry for those boys down there, having to deal with no less than the supernatural walking dead. Moreover, nobody had drawn any hard connection between the Derby Circuit and the October 11 murders yet, but supernatural or not, as far as anyone knew, Oakland's new oddity was as irrelevant to our investigation as it was fishy. But there is a correlation, I thought, among all the events, to wit. None of it was linear or logical, and nobody had explained any of it, and all of it was temporally anomalous. Strippers in dozens of cities on the same night with no suspects. A woman purportedly turning into a canine. All of it seemingly nonsensical, random, unrelated, but for circumstantial, tenuous interrelationships. About 8, I went home to take it easy. I sat around the apartment in my boxers, clicking one of my revolvers at the telly while I watched old black and white crime drama. I grew bored of that and switched it over to newer, in-color crime drama. I wrote in my journal about the events of the day and the developments of the case, and getting thoughts out on paper sometimes helps me find new perspective for the loose ends, mysteries, and clouded issues of the week. Somewhere along the way, I dozed off on the couch. About 1:30 in the morning, the phone rang. It was Dixie. "Get your narrow ass down to the morgue ASAP," she said. "Okay, put on some coffee. I'll be there directly," I answered her. I replaced my pants, grabbed a clean white shirt, grabbed my coat as I struck out into the rain to meet the early Thursday morning. When I got there, a few Pierce County Sheriff's Office vehicles were parked in the coroner's office lot, and there were deputies dusting about the doors and filling out reports. "We're missing several pieces of your evidence," Dixie said. I didn't like what I thought she was about to say, or what I knew she must be about to say, but she said it anyway. "So all 3 of your October 11 bodies are gone. The building security alarms went off about 0100. I don't know what they found, but one of the docks in the back was wide open." "Were the security cameras rolling?" I asked. "Yep. The county boys are in there looking at them right now," she said. Dixie and I walked back around the building. Of the 3 vertical door vehicle docks on the back east side of the building, the one in the middle was all the way open. Rain continued to fall. We went back in, and in one of the supply closets was the digital surveillance system monitor, and one of the sheriff's office investigators was eyeballing the tape. He backed up the grainy black and white recording for us. "You can see the glow of headlights here in the parking lot to the east. They're approaching from the north at about timestamp 0058. Sedan of some kind, because the vehicle's cab doesn't protrude above the hedgings and landscaping that's between this lot and the lot behind us. You see the vehicle pull around 180 degrees and stop, but the headlights stay on. There's no audio on the tape, but presumably the vehicle was left running. Then, from through the hedge comes this individual, jogging across the parking lot in a long coat. You can't make out facial features because of the shadows and rain, but he or she here gives one yank on the garage door and throws it open, and it comes right up. There are no cameras inside the office, so the next time we see this person is at timestamp 0101, coming back through the open garage door, carrying what appears to be your 3 bodies. The biggest one on the bottom, it looks like probably the girl on top, like pancakes, cordwood, through the hedgings, and quickly you see the glow of the vehicle lights as the car is put in gear and starts back north, the deputy said. It looks like they just walked in, picked up whom they needed from the body locker, and moseyed right out. Why was the door unlocked? Dixie answered. That shouldn't have been, and they weren't when I left. Those docks are where we take in shipments from medical trucks and slow-rolling ambulances, and We load up the outbound funeral wagons through those doors also. Those rear doors were last used late yesterday afternoon for official business, and I double-checked them but myself before I cleared out of here for the day at about 7 o'clock. She continued, so, when any of the family members ask, Rick, I'll just tell them that we need to keep their corpses because the case is open and sensitive still. But that story won't last forever. It's a fact that right now the bodies are gone and probably gone forever, and because I don't know what particular use or potential destination might be specific to these three corpses, I don't know how to suggest that you go about tracking them down. She threw her hands in the air. She made a good point and where to look. I thought the nearest sausage factory. Taxidermist, maybe. I speculate that this was the visit dear ex-wife yesterday promised to you by the guy with the Russian accent, in which case he's really gone the extra mile, I said to Dixie.